Welcome once again to our series, Salvation History, the New Testament, the Acts of the Apostles, the Epistles, and the Book of Revelation. I'm Monsignor Larry Moran, chaplain of the Carmelite Monastery and John Paul II Catholic High School in Terre Haute. We're starting, and we got started, a new series of programs on the New Testament, the Acts of the Apostles, Epistles, and Book of Revelation. Our guest, as usual for this segment, and the author of the theme, is Ron Eldred, who teaches religion and history at John Paul II Catholic High School. So we're going to continue. We left off about the first persecution in the church, Ron, with the stoning of St. Stephen, at which Saul, who was eventually Paul the Apostle, and Saul was there holding the coats of those stoning and giving his encouragement to those who were persecuting and killing Stephen, who was considered to be such an apostate because he was the follower of Jesus of Nazareth. So maybe we can take up where we left off. We're just finishing the first persecution, and we're kind of working into the second persecution of the early church.
That's a good place to start. We've already seen how the Jews in and around Jerusalem persecuted the early Christians who preached a Messiah that didn't conform to the Jewish expectations of the time. Most of the Jews at the time expected a Messiah who would be a conquering king, you know, rather than some kind of suffering servant type of Messiah. And this conquering king, of course, would lead them in a rebellion against the Romans and restore the Davidic kingdom. However, the Christians believed that Jesus Christ was the fulfillment of Isaiah's suffering servant and other Jewish prophecies. The Christians had been hopeful that their fellow countrymen would accept their vision of a new Israel. But in spite of many individual conversions, fierce opposition arose against them instead, especially around the area of Jerusalem. And as you mentioned, we discussed in our last session, that the apostles and St. Stephen ran into trouble with the Jewish authorities. This was probably between the years 35 and 37 A.D. The reason I say that, I put that little spread there, is because most sources claim that St. Stephen was martyred in the year 33 A.D., perhaps 34, and that St. Paul was converted to Christianity in about that same time. However, Ann Carroll, in her Great World History textbook that we use at John Paul II Catholic High School for our World History class, entitled Christ the King, Lord of History, she claims that Stephen probably died in 37 A.D., after Pontius Pilate was relieved of his duty as procurator of Judea in 36 A.D. She says that the Jews would not have dared to execute a man without permission of the Roman authorities had they been present. And, of course, as we described the story in our last session, the Jews got so angry with, the Jewish leaders got so angry with St. Stephen during one of his sermons, they stoned him to death right there.
Okay, well, so much for the first persecution around Jerusalem. How about now the second wave of persecution begun by King Herod around 41 A.D.? Can we speak about that?
In 41 A.D., Emperor Claudius gave Herod Agrippa dominion over Judea and Samaria. If I recall right, he was like a grandson of Herod the Great. He already possessed the territories of his uncles, Herod Antipas, who was exiled in 39 A.D., and Herod Philip, who died in 33 A.D. And then since Pontius Pilate had been released from duty in 36 A.D., and probably exiled somewhere, Herod Agrippa obtained the power of procurator in Judea as well. So basically, he was ruling the whole land. That almost is a territory as large as what David and King Solomon had. According to several sources, He was eager to endear himself to his Jewish subjects, so he continued the persecution of the Christians in his kingdom, in which James the Greater lost his life in the year 44 A.D., James the Greater meaning, of course, St. John's brother, as opposed to James the Lesser, who was a cousin of Jesus. And it was at this time Peter and the other apostles narrowly escaped with their lives. St. Luke describes Herod Agrippa I in the Acts as a cruel, heartless king who persecuted the Jerusalem church, whereas Flavius Josephus, describes him as a kindly man. So we get two diametrically opposed conceptions of the man. As one source says in regard to this matter, the persecution makes sense if one recalls that Agrippa had been born and raised in to revere his Jewishness, and that he would resent a movement that had become that had begun during his absence from Judea that equated Jesus of Nazareth with the God of Judaism, that is, with Yahweh. So it was 44 A.D. that the Christians began to spread their gospel and to the ends of the earth. According to St. Luke, Herod himself was struck down by an angel of the Lord at the games of Caesarea Maritima in 41 A.D. and died a horrible death, eaten by worms, because of his persecution of the Christians, and because after a speech he gave the people, shouted of himself, quote, "The voice of a God and not of a man." We find this in Acts chapter 12, verses 22 through 23.
Okay. What happened to the Christians, Ron, after Herod Agrippa's death?
After Agrippa's death, the Roman procuratorship, or procuratorship, resumed, and those leaders maintained a neutral peace for a while. We're going to see later on St. Paul comes across some of these. The New Testament states that Paul was himself imprisoned in several occasions by Roman authorities, stoned by the Pharisees and left for dead on one occasion, and was eventually taken as a prisoner to Rome due to Jewish instigation. This, of course, that's quite a ways along our story here, several sessions down the line. And as we have discussed, Peter and other early Christians were also imprisoned, beaten, and harassed. Jewish persecution of Christians ended after a Jewish revolt against the Romans in 67 A.D., which led to the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in 70 A.D. We'll have occasion to discuss these kind of things later in the session or in the course. The Christian community had fled to safety across the Jordan River at that time, to the already pacified region of Pella. It had been estimated that the early Jewish persecutions resulted in a total of about 2,000 Christian deaths. However, the Jewish persecutions were mild and small when compared with the brutal and widespread Roman persecutions that were to follow.
Okay, can you give us some information about the reasons for the Roman persecution of the Christians?
The Christians in the Roman Empire were persecuted as a consequence of professing their faith. It began during the ministry of Jesus, even back that early, and continued intermittently over a period of about 300 years, 3 centuries, when Emperor Constantine legalized Christianity in 313 A.D. And then Christianity became the state religion of the Roman Empire at the time of Emperor Theodosius I in 380 A.D. The first documented case of imperially instigated persecution of the Christians in the Roman Empire was perpetrated by Nero. In 64 A.D., a great fire broke out in Rome, destroying considerable part of the city, portion of the city, especially the wooden homes of the lower classes. The lower classes lived in homes that are made out of wood. Some of them were 4, 6, 8 feet high in terms of stories. And the wood, of course, obviously in these homes was quite old and quite dry. And so once they got started, they went up like tinder. It was rumored that of Nero at the time that he had intentionally started the fire himself to make room for a grand palace that he wanted to build in the region of the fire. And that's, you know, what we know of Nero. I think he certainly would have been capable of doing something like that. One source states on this matter that, quote, Nero successfully capitalized on the already existing public suspicion of his religious sect, of this religious sect, and it could be argued, exacerbated the hostilities held toward them throughout the Roman Empire, end of quote. One way that Christians were singled out for persecution was the Roman authorities would issue a decree requiring public sacrifice, a formality equivalent to a testimonial of allegiance to the emperor and to the established order. For example, the emperor Decius authorized roving commissions to visit the cities and villages to supervise the execution of the sacrifices and to deliver written certificates to all citizens who performed them. Christians were often given opportunities to avoid further punishment by publicly offering sacrifices or burning incense to Roman gods, and were accused by the Romans of impiety when they refused to do so. And refusal was punished by arrest, imprisonment, even torture, and sometimes even executions if they didn't recant. Christians fled to safe places in the countryside when they could, and some purchased certificates to avoid persecution. Several councils held at Carthage a couple of centuries later debated the extent to which the community should accept these apostate or lapsed Christians back into the fold. The famous Donatist controversy arose during St. Augustine's episcopate in North Africa, and it was mainly over this issue. Tacitus, a famous Roman historian, tells us that forms of execution used by the Romans included burning alive, systematic murder, crucifixion, and the feeding of Christians to lions and other wild beasts in the Colosseum and other places. Actually, the Colosseum wouldn't have been built yet, so it would have been the Circus Maximus or some other place like that. And most of the towns and cities around the Roman Empire had some kind of a small arena where these kind of things could take place. Tacitus states that, quote, in their deaths, they were made the subjects of sport, for they were wrapped in the hides of wild beasts and torn to pieces by dogs, or nailed to crosses, or set on fire. And when they declined, were burned, declined to refuse to sacrifice to the emperor or to the Roman gods. They were burned to serve for nocturnal lights, to light up the night sky. That ends Tacitus' little quote there. Tradition has it the apostles, Saints Peter and Paul, were martyred in Rome during these Neronian persecutions, probably in the year 67 A.D. I've seen the year 64 A.D. before with respect to that particular, the execution of those two, but I think more probable it was in 67 A.D. According to many historians, Jews and Christians were heavily persecuted toward the end of Domitian's reign, which took place between 89 and 96. We're still in the first century, you see. The worst persecutions haven't even begun yet. Moreover, other Roman emperors persecuted the Christians, especially during the reign of Diocletian from about 284 to 305 AD. After Constantine issued the Edict of Milan in 313 AD, granting toleration to the Christians no longer were persecuted by Rome. But, unfortunately, they began to persecute each other. That is, once they could come out of the catacombs, you know, and be out in the open. For at least two centuries afterwards, which among Christians who were persecuted depended on the emperor's brand of Christianity. In other words, whichever group of Christians who were persecuted, it depended on who the emperor, what his particular brand of Christianity was. If he was a Catholic, Arians, Nestorians, Monophysites, Pelagians, and other heretics were persecuted. If the emperor happened to favor one or the other of the heretics, it was Catholics who were persecuted. So it was about a 200-year period where things were rather unsteady. There were always Christians who were in control, but they weren't always Orthodox Christians who were in control. So the unorthodox Christians would, when they were in control, like the Arians, for example, they would persecute the Orthodox Christians and vice versa.
Well, Ron, it seems inconsistent that Romans persecuted the Christians. Hadn't one of their distinguishing marks always been the toleration of the religions of the people that they conquered?
That's true. The Roman Empire was generally quite tolerant in its treatment of other religions. In fact, sometimes they would even set up temples in various places to the local gods, or would have sacrifices performed, to the local gods. The imperial policy was generally one of incorporating the local gods of a nearby conquered area into the Roman pantheon of gods, and often given Roman names. The Romans even tolerated the Jewish belief in one god and their refusal to worship the emperor as long as the Jews paid the Roman tax, wherever the Jews happened to be living, in the empire. Since Christians were largely considered members of a Jewish sect, at least during the first century, they didn't distinguish, they didn't know the difference between Christians and Jews. The Romans didn't persecute them, for the most part, during the first century. As I said, with the exception of Emperor Nero and some of those aberrations. But Jews began to lose their favored status during the reign of the Emperor Caligula. He was insane. Who reigned from 37 to 41 AD. But the big break didn't come until the Jewish revolt in 66 AD, or 67 AD, I've seen both dates, which ended in the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in 70 AD. And by the end of the first century, Christians were very clearly distinguished from Jews by the Roman authorities.
Well, why did the Romans deviate from this policy of toleration that was sort of one of their distinguishing marks when it came to Christians?
Scholars of Roman history tell us that for the Romans, religion was first and foremost a social activity that promoted unity and loyalty to the state. A religious attitude the Romans called pietas, or piety. The great Roman philosopher of natural law, Cicero, I think probably in Latin they would have pronounced it back then, Cicero, but we'll call him Cicero, okay. Like we do in English, wrote that, quote, now again this is Cicero here, quote, if piety in the Roman sense were to disappear, social unity and justice would perish along with it, end of quote. One Roman history scholar states that the early Roman writers viewed Christianity not as another kind of pietas, but as a superstition. Then he quotes Pliny the Younger, a Roman governor writing around 110 AD, who called Christianity a superstition taken to extravagant lengths. Similarly, the Roman historian Tacitus, whom I just quoted a while ago, called it a deadly superstition. And another Roman historian by the name of Suetonius called Christianity a class of persons given to a new and mischievous superstition, rather than the meaning that we give superstition as attributing power to things that belong only to God. The Romans considered it something foreign and different in a negative sense, that a religious belief was valid only insofar as it could be shown to be old and in line with ancient customs. New teachings, such as the Christian teachings, were regarded with distrust. Pliny and Tacitus and Suetonius are all extra or outside of Bible sources, biblical sources. In fact, I recall when I was in graduate school at the University of Illinois, I took a course in the philosophy of history where I wrote a paper about Tacitus and his attitude toward the Christians. One authority of Roman history concludes that, quote, the Roman disdain for Christianity then arose in large part from its sense that it was bad for society. As proof, he quotes the 3rd century Neoplatonist philosopher Porphyry as saying, quote, how can people not be in every way impious and atheistic who have apostatized from the customs of our ancestors, through which every nation and city is sustained? What else are they than fighters against God? End of quote. Therefore, the scholar, he goes on to say, quote, as Porphyry's argument indicates, hatred of Christians also arose from the belief that proper piety to the Roman gods helped to sustain the well-being of the cities and their people. Though much of the Roman religion was utilitarian, it was also heavily motivated by the pagan sense that bad things will happen if the gods are not respected and worshipped properly. Porphyry was one of the most prominent pagan critics of Christianity in the days of the very early church. In fact, in the 2nd century, Justin, St. Justin Martyr, wrote a defense, actually wrote a couple of defenses, apologias in Latin, of the Christian faith that he addressed to the Emperor Antoninus Pius and his son Marcus Aurelius.
Okay, so the Roman government is really seeing any deviation from the ancient pagan worship as really sort of treason.
Yeah, unpatriotic and treasonous, yes, and not just a religious heresy, you know, kind mm-hmm. of thing.
Well, didn't St. Augustine encounter this type of criticism of Christianity during his own lifetime?
Yes, that brings us, you know, to the late 4th century and on into the early 5th century. It's interesting because Augustine was a philosophical Neoplatonist like Porphyry. But he also countered the idea that the neglect of the old gods that had supposedly made Rome strong was responsible for the disasters which were overtaking the Mediterranean world during his lifetime, especially the decline and imminent fall of the Roman Empire. This idea had surfaced again in the early 5th century when the destruction of Rome took place in the year 410 AD, and it caused many to worry that the gods were angry at the empire's toleration and eventually recognition of Christianity as the empire's official religion. In fact, St. Augustine wrote his famous The City of God, Civitas Dei, I believe, in Latin, to refute this view.
Okay, well, weren't the pagans also suspicious of the Christians because they mistakenly believed that they were cannibals and immoral in other ways from what they believed that they believed?
Yes, that's correct. They distrusted Christians at least in part because of their secret practices, which led to a misunderstanding of the nature of their worship. Words like sacrifice, love feast, talk of eating Christ's flesh. This sounded suspicious to the pagans that the Christians were guilty of cannibalism and incest and orgies and all kinds of immorality, which of course was exactly the opposite of the truth. The Christians had to practice their faith in secret, just to practice at all, because of the persecutions, but this led to further suspicion and hatred of them, so it sort of fed on it, this whole thing.
Well, do we have any idea how many Christians were martyred for the faith during the first few centuries of the church's existence?
Some scholars have maintained that the average Christian was very little affected by the persecutions. That in the main, the most likely to be persecuted were either those who sought martyrdom or extremists who were disruptive. One scholar has written that the Roman persecutions were generally sporadic, localized, and dependent on the political climate and the disposition of each of the emperors. or maybe even the local authorities. Imperial decrees against Christians were usually directed against church property and the scriptures and the clergy rather than to the average layperson. Far more Christians have been martyred for their faith in the 20th century than all of the preceding centuries put together. No doubt it was in the thousands, though.
Say that again, because I've often heard that, but it's such an astounding statement. And, of course, it includes the persecutions of Nazis in Germany, the Russians under Stalin, when there were, I guess, millions.
And the Chinese, of course, under Mao and any other atheistic communist ruler.
Well, read the last sentence again, Ron, if you will.
Well, it's been said that far more Christians have been martyred for their faith in the 20th century,
now, that's our century,
than all of the preceding centuries put together.
Well, I think, certainly to me, that sounds startling because I never imagined it that way. But when you come down to the numbers and the facts, I guess there's not much question about it at all. We've got a couple of minutes left. You want to say something about martyrdom for the faith?
Martyrdom was an ideal that one scholar says represented a new ideology of Christian suffering that inverted and subverted the Roman concepts of civic duty, honor, and justice. The Christian martyr was willing to give his or her life for the sake of the faith. It was seen by them as an heroic victory over their persecutors. And for this reason, some early Christians sought out and even welcomed martyrdom. Men even such as St. Ignatius of Antioch come to my mind. Tertullian tells us that some Roman authorities, they tried to avoid Christians because they goaded, chided, belittled, and insulted the crowds until they demanded their death. And he mentions one group of people who presented themselves to the Roman governor of Asia, declaring themselves to be Christians and encouraging the governor to do their duty and to kill them.
Oh, my.
He did execute a few, but when the rest demanded it as well, he reportedly responded to an exasperated manner. "You wretches, if you want to die, you have cliffs to leap from and ropes to hang by." Well, however, not all Christians sought martyrdom. And, for example, St. Polycarp and St. Cyprian, of course, they tried to avoid martyrdom for various reasons.
And, of course, I think that would be seriously questioned today, that I'm seeking martyrdom.
Yes.
It's, of course, it shows the intensity of belief and the conviction that this life is only temporary, preparing for the next. But it really would be an exaggeration to actually seek for martyrdom. Ron, I'm sorry our time has run out on us, and to our listening audience, we say may God bless you all, always, and in all ways.